Robert Kiyosaki, author of the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, will tell you why the rich people don't buy mutual funds and what they do to build great wealth.
Hello, this is Robert Kiyosaki. I'm the author of a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which is a true story based upon my two fathers, one my real dad, my biological dad, and the other one was my best friend's father. The poor dad was my real dad, who was a PhD in education, very smart man, graduated from university in less than 2 years, went to Stanford, University of Chicago, and he was ultimately the head of education for the state of Hawaii. And the reason I call him my poor dad was simply because he was a high-paid government official. He made a lot of money, but no matter how much money he made, he was always broke about the 20th day into a 30-day month. So the reason I call him poor was that no matter how much money he made, he was still broke. My rich dad, on the other hand, was a man who didn't go to school. He dropped out of school at age 13 because his father died and he took over the family business. And so he ultimately became one of the wealthiest men in Hawaii. Most people don't know him because he was a very private individual. So starting from the age of 9, I was greatly influenced by both men. And the interesting thing was when it came to the subject of money, they both had very contradictory points of view on the subject of money. For instance, my poor dad always said our house is our greatest asset and it's our biggest investment. And my rich dad would say, man, if your house is not an asset, if you're financially illiterate, you'll understand it's not an asset. And if it's your biggest investment, you're in very big trouble. So for those who have not read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I think it would be interesting for you to read. It's very simple. I learned to be a wealthy person starting from the age of 9, very simple diagrams and things like that. So what this tape is about the subject of investing. There is a difference between what the rich invest in versus the poor and the middle class. I'm going to tell you a story. I have a friend of mine here in Phoenix, Arizona, where I reside now, and he's a very bright young man. He's an attorney. He's making a lot of money. So he went to see his financial advisor, and his financial advisor advised him to, you know, buy mutual funds, diversify, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the problem with this young attorney was that his specialty is family law. And being in family law, what he spent occasionally, one of the not so good parts about his business or his profession is that he needs to divorce the very wealthy or the very rich in town. And the reason he came to talk to me, he says, here's my financial advisor telling me to buy mutual funds and et cetera, et cetera. And he says, when I divorce a very rich family or a couple, they don't have mutual funds in it. So I asked him, so what do you find inside their portfolios of the very rich? He says, I find two things in general. I find businesses and I find real estate. I said, that's true. What the rich generally do is and the way they get rich is because they invest in businesses and real estate. And he says, so they don't buy mutual funds? I said, they may or may not, but it's not the way they get rich. In other words, you don't get rich by buying mutual funds. So what this tape is about is to clear up some of the differences between what the rich invest in and the poor and middle class do. And rather than have me yak at you all day long, one of the secrets of my success as an investor and as a business owner is that I don't have to be that smart. I mean, a lot of people are afraid, you know, I didn't go to school or I didn't get good grades or I'm not that smart. Well, I'm not either. I didn't get good grades. But one of my secrets of success or the hot tip is to have work with people smarter than me. I'm very pleased today to have my advisors in this room with me because they can probably give much more detail about these subjects than I can. So one of them is Diane Kennedy, who is my strategic CPA. She's a member of Mensa, which means she's a genius. She has a master's in taxation, and so she's far beyond just a CPA. The other one is Kim Butler, who is a financial planner who guides me through the mazes of taxes and protection and et cetera, which the rich do. So I'm very happy to introduce my two advisors. And so, Diane, would you mind introducing yourself first, give a little bit of your background, and then Kim?
As Robert said, my name is Diane Kennedy, and I have offices both in Phoenix, Arizona, and Reno, Nevada. I specialize in business owners that have multi-corporations. We work together in putting together comprehensive tax planning for the high-income, high-wealth individuals. All of my clients, then, are wealthy individuals, business owners who invest in real estate and are interested in their future growth.
Thank you. And Kim?
Hello, I'm Kim Butler, and I am a certified financial planner. My background is banking. I was trained at a commercial bank and did a lot of commercial lending. And as I was going through that process, realized that the real wealth in our country is in the entrepreneurial fields and often connected with real estate as well. And as I delved into the financial planning arena and was trained through the insurance companies and the mutual funds, I began to see the differences in what the rich do versus what the poor do. And that's what we'll have some fun talking about today.
Good. So as a person who's made quite a bit of money as an investor, I'm often asked by people, they say, I have some extra money. What would you recommend I invest in? Or my broker said I should buy XYZ stock. What do I think? Or my friend recommended this mutual fund. Would you buy that? Or what are you investing in? And the problem with those questions, and oftentimes I appear vague and evasive, the reason is because for me, the subject of investing is not something I just say a yes or no to, or that's good or that's bad, because to me, investing requires to be a professional investor and to be wealthy as an investor requires a little bit more sophistication than just saying, you know, I buy the dips, or I dollar cost average, or I diversify, or the PE is doing this, or the Dow is doing that. That's not sophisticated. I mean, I need more information to do that. The points this tape will focus on are very simple. Number one point is what the rich focus on as investing as compared to the poor and middle class. And I'm not here to make the poor and middle class right or wrong or the rich right or wrong. I'm just doing my best to point out some distinctions or some differences between the three different groups. Number two, there's this fallacy out there that people think investing is risky. Investing by itself is not risky. Speculation is, which is saying that I think the price of the stock's going to go up or the stock's going to go down, I'm going to short it. That's speculation. What my rich dad taught me about investing is not about risk. Investing is about fundamentally doing the right thing so that there's a guaranteed result at the other end. As in the movie Wall Street, I'm not recommending this guy, but as Gordon Gekko, nefarious character in the movie, said, he says, I don't throw darts when I pick a stock. He says, I bet on sure things. And that's what the rich do. And he did it illegal. I'm not recommending that. But I only bet on sure things. So that I'm saying that investing is not risky. And number three, the biggest message I want to say out there is that you don't have to be that smart. It's fairly easy, and it's just fundamental. And the reason I don't have to be smart is because I surround myself with smart people. One of the biggest mistakes I think people make is they think they have to know all the answers. Ladies and gentlemen, we're living in the information age, and information is doubling every year now. It is impossible for anybody to have all the answers, and so one of your greatest assets an individual can have is high-qualified friends and very, you know, friends in smart places, not necessarily high places, who can advise you. So going over really quickly, this tape is about what the rich invest in versus the poor middle class. That is not supposed to be risky. Speculation is risky, but not investing. And number three is relatively easy. And what we're going to give you in this short tape is just a big picture on the whole subject. The other part about it is this, as a disclaimer, there are many ways to get rich. We're just going to share one way. If you're making $20 million a year as a movie star, you don't need this tape. If you want to find out how to get rich as an investor, we have some ideas for you. Number two, this is an educational tape. This is not an advisory tape. In other words, we strongly advise people, as I'm already saying, to get strong, competent financial advice as possible because everybody's situation is different. So this is educational, not advisory. Don't go out and say, I told you to buy real estate or build a business. I'm not telling anybody anything. I'm just giving you some education on the subject. And number three, this tape will work regardless of which country you live in. I oftentimes hear people say, oh, that's for the U.S. only, or that works in the U.S. And what they do at that point is they discount what I'm trying to say. For those that know me, they know I travel throughout the world. And while some of the laws may be different in their details, ultimately, as I travel the world, I find out the rich operate very similar in the same way, which this tape will cover. So for those of you who live outside the U.S., please know the laws may be different, but the principles remain the same. When it comes to advisors, I want to say this much, the same thing. There's advisors for the rich, there's advisors for the poor, and there's advisors for the middle class. What would you like to say about that?
Well, I think it's so important that people ask the specialty of the advisor prior to doing any other kind of discussion. I mean, Diane, if somebody came to you and told you about their situation and then said what your specialty is, Don't you think that's a little backwards?
Absolutely, Kim. In fact, I've had clients call me and say, I have $50,000 and I want to get rich. That was an actual phone call. That's pretty hard to advise someone when they have a very vague idea. I think the fundamental thing is, first, a person has to know what direction they are going, what is right for them. They have to understand their own situation and then decide what kind of an advisor they need. We talk a lot about what is the right investment for a person, but really only a person is going to know what the right investment is for them.
It's the idea of having the long-term goal or perspective or vision in place first, and then asking or seeking out the advisor that's going to have the specialty that will take you on the road to get there.
So what we're going into right away is actually, is a lot of people focus on the product versus the strategy. And what we're going to say to you right now is that to be successful is not whether it's a mutual fund or a bond or a stock or real estate or whatever, or Beanie Babies or Barbie dolls. It's the strategy. And what most people focus on is the product. You know, should I buy a mutual fund versus, well, what's your strategy? And the thing that we were talking about here is this, and it's one of my personal bugaboos, and Kim Butler said it very accurately the other day. She says, most people are planning to be poor. Would you say that's true?
Yes, I do. When you take a look at the strategies that people are using, and I'll reemphasize that part, it is a goal to be poor. And is planning to be poor what you want to be doing?
And people are doing it unconsciously, and they don't even know they're doing it. And I'll give you an example. When somebody says, I have a superannuation or a 401k or an IRA and all this, and I'm putting money, a 401k, they're actually saving money. They're not really investing. And they'll often say this line. They say, I can pull it out when my income is lower. In other words, that's a very middle class ideal, is that, you know, let's say retire at 65. When I'm 65, I'm going to be poor. That's what they're saying. So my income will be lower at 65. So they're unconsciously, subliminally programming to be poor. The rich have a different problem. By the time they're 65, they have too much money and they have so much income that this little puny 401k or superannuation or Central Provident Fund in Singapore and all this, it's a problem because they can't pull that money out tax-free. And so what most people are doing via the advisors, you know, the magazines, the television shows and all this, most of the advisors are catering strictly to the middle class and the upper middle class wage earner employee types. But the rich cannot think that way. Would you agree with that?
Yes, definitely. When you take a look at the strategies that are written about in the magazines, that are talked about on the newspapers.
And on the radio.
You're right. Everywhere. You have to go to the author of that article and consider the source. And oftentimes, you have to ask yourself, is someone that's making 40 grand living in New York City even
writing
investing?
Writing for a newspaper.
Right. Even investing money themselves. And it's just like we talked about earlier, the long-term vision of what you want to have happen is where you need to keep your focus and not be taking advice from people that may have a different vision. In fact, one that you don't even know about because you don't know the person. In addition, when you think about the strategies that are most often suggested, you have to take a look at the strategy, not the product. And just like the rich do things differently in their lives that we see, they're doing things differently in their lives that we don't see. In their financial life, they buy insurance differently. They buy mutual funds differently. It's not the product. It's the strategy that they use behind it.
And for me, I see the tax planning is so much different. For example, in the United States, one of the divisions this year has stated that within 5 years, 10 million Americans won't be filing tax returns anymore. They're going to automatically assess taxes, such as we see in European countries. That's very significant for evidence of what's happening in our technological age.
I want to say something about taxes. Is most people think of taxes as only income tax. In other words, you know, they say we work until July for the government. Well, it's actually worse than that, because the real reality on taxes is we're taxed when we earn, we're taxed when we spend, we tax when we saved, we tax when we invest, we tax when we lose money, we tax when we win money, and we're also taxed when we die. So taxes for most people are the number one expense. So part of the strategy, and this is where Kim comes in, and one of the things my rich dad taught me was the importance of insurance. because insurance is a way of minimizing or sheltering ourselves or protecting ourselves from the ravages of the government. For those who listened to my first tape with Diane Kennedy, in America, if you're an employee or you're self-employed, it's very tough to protect yourself from the government because the government is taking their money before you even get paid. Is that correct, Diane?
Absolutely. We talked also about the newly self-employed person. A lot of people think, I can get out of this by quitting my job and starting my own business.
Yeah, home-based business, I'm going to be an entrepreneur, and they're really self-employed.
Absolutely. What they've done is they've bought themselves a job or created a job for themselves. They just work for somebody different themselves.
And that's largely because of the structure that they've set up, right? The lack of a corporation,
plus a plan and plus a vision and plus knowing the difference between a small business owner and a guy like Bill Gates.
Right.
And what most people become are self-employed small business owners. And I mean this with great respect. I feel sorry for them because it is the hardest position to operate out of. If you're successful, you have to be S. You know, self-employed also stands for super person because for my first year in my own business, I spent 3 days out of the five fending off the government in so many rules and regulations. And that's what happens to a person that says, since there's no job security, I'm going to start my own business. And they go from employee to self-employed. That's why I wrote this book, Cash Flow Quadrant, which is the book right after Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's part two of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's about the difference between a self-employed person and a business owner. And there's very big differences mentally, emotionally, and psychologically. So what we're saying here is that first of all, is your strategy as to what do you want to become as your years go on. And unfortunately, most people in the middle class are already subconsciously programming themselves to be poor at age 65. We're quite shocked at thinking about, you know, most people, they have kids. Let's say they have four children, and they struggle financially to have
private schools
and the new house and the cars and the soccer and et cetera, et cetera. And they say, oh, life will be good when the kids are finally out of school. And so finally, 30 years later, all the kids are out of school. And what's happening, you're saying, for many people in America today, they have four new kids moving in. And it could be their mom and dad on the wife's side and mom and dad on the husband's side. And so that's what's happening. Is that true?
It's very true. I see it in my client base a lot. It's called reverse parenting. Your parents come in to live with you, and that vision is missing, that dream, that goal of where you want to be.
Right.
But isn't it true that most of the people have been set up for that? They've been told, get a job or else start your own job and buy a big house and invest in a pension fund.
Buy mutual funds.
Exactly. And they're not building assets that are going to create other income streams.
And shelter from taxes.
Exactly.
Right.
So they're paying a large tax load. A self-employed person pays the highest percentage in taxes because they're paying additional taxes. But the key is that they have set up a plan to be poor.
Right.
Just like their parents did. So they all get to live together.
Which brings up a point is, let's say we go forward to the year 2010. How optimistic are you that there will be such things as Social Security and Medicare and in the countries throughout the world where I go to? Can the government afford to take care of the millions and millions of people who are planning to be poor?
I think the issue of any kind of structured deal, and that's what it's looked at, is a government deal, is about the worst thing that you can rely on because it has...
That's planning to be poor.
That's right.
Really
poor. It has an entitlement attitude of, well, someone else is going to take care of me.
Looking internationally at the demographics, I'm a numbers person. I love to look at these. The baby boomer generation is international. All countries have experienced that. And as this group moves up and gets older, that means there's less people to pay for them. It's the numbers don't work.
Today, it's for every retiree, there's three people paying for them. And in a few years, it's going to be a one-to-one ratio.
Right.
So not only will you be supporting your mom and dad, you'll be supporting everybody else's moms and dads out there. And that's what we say. If your intention is your company or the government's going to take care of you, that's really planning to be poor. And what most of the middle class are planning to do is they plan to be on lower income status at age 65. So what this audio tape is about, and I'm not making either one right or wrong because it's a free country, you can make your choices on it. I already made my choice how to plan or how to come up with a strategy to be rich, and that's what this tape is about. And so, Diane, also there's a fallacy in the what I call the middle class dream is get a safe, secure job, buy a big house, and then, you know, invest in mutual funds. And that's okay for most people, but there is a hidden flaw in that thinking. in the tax code, isn't that correct? Because you make more money, you buy a bigger house, and everybody says, well, I get a tax write-off for a bigger house. There's a flaw in that thinking, isn't that correct? Well,
that's a predominant thinking in the U.S. because we have a home mortgage deduction. And as people make more and more money, they then think, I need to buy a bigger and bigger house.
So they get further in debt.
Exactly. But the tax code has a phase-out of the mortgage interest deduction as your income gets above a certain point. That is a huge shock. I've seen many clients every year suddenly, well, I have write-off of $25,000 in interest, but you didn't get to take any of it. So that is a true expense with no tax benefit then.
So you're saying if you make a lot of money and you buy a big house, there comes a point where you pass this threshold, you're making so much money, the government says you're no longer allowed to deduct the interest on your house?
That's absolutely correct.
So
it makes the house become just like all of the paper assets that our current environment suggests that we have. And you really have to look at your asset base and determine whether it's a true asset. In other words, does it put money in your pocket, or is it really more of an expense?
Kim has got an excellent point. A fundamental issue is, what is the definition of what an asset is? What is the definition of a liability? And as a CPA, I see that there's a incredible value to being able to read accurately your numbers. What does your financial statement really look like? Not what your financial planner puts together who's an outside party and doesn't understand you, but do you intuitively understand where you are?
Your own financial position.
Exactly. And where do you want to go?
And that's what I covered in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, was my poor dad, the school teacher, said word literacy was everything. And what my rich dad, he said, don't listen to your best friend's father because he's illiterate. But my poor dad was financially literate. In which he could read numbers. And I've said this many times, that people that can read numbers have more power over those who can only read words. Because being financially illiterate in this world, you oftentimes need to take advice from what Kim was talking about, some writer for some newspaper who's making $40,000 a year giving you financial advice.
Well, actually, the numbers do tell a story. That's where the literacy comes in, is when looking at a financial statement, can you tell what that story is?
Is it a story of hope, or is it a story of tragedy? You know, he worked really hard and he died broke, or he started off slow and he became a mega billionaire, you know, and the numbers will tell you that story. So the second part of this tape, we're getting into what the rich think about that the poor and middle class do not. And most importantly, I think Kim said it most accurately, is that what the rich think about is a strategy, not the product. And that was my rich dad. He very, very simple strategy for me personally. Since the age of 9, I knew these simple steps. Now, if you don't understand it, don't worry, because like I said, I hire or work with smart people. I don't have to be that smart. I just have to know where I'm going. So the strategy was very simple. I have to build businesses. That was my strategy. I buy real estate. And what the poor and middle class buy, so real estate is a tangible asset, and what the poor and middle class buy are paper assets. So that's why they feel so insecure subconsciously, because most of their assets are paper and their job is tenuous. And as self-employed, you have to work very hard, and the government, everybody's after you in that place. So the difference between rich and poor is a strategy was to buy real estate because it's a tangible asset. Number three was to hire the best advisors possible. Number four was to protect yourself with insurance. That was vitally important all the time for my rich dad, was that the product of insurance to cover us. And also understand step five was to understand corporate entities, i.e. an S corp, difference between an S corporation, a C corporation, a limited partnership, and a limited liability, an LLC corporation. And again, if that's overwhelming for some of you, please don't worry, simply because it's stuff I don't understand either. I just knew I had to do them if I was going to start thinking not like a middle class or a poor person, but to think like a rich person. And so those are the five simple steps. When I was a young boy, my rich dad told me this story. And the story went like this. He says, this is the difference between an investor and everybody else, or a business owner and everybody else. He says, there was this village, and I was 9 years old when he told me this story. And it was this lake. And he said the village needed water. So they put it out to contractual bid, who could bring water from this lake a mile away to the village. And these two gentlemen bid for it, and both got the contract. So gentleman A, what he went out to do, because it was quick and it was easy and it was fast and it didn't cost much money, was he bought two buckets. And so he's running back and forth through the village from morning to night. This is an employee or a self-employed type of person, lugging these two buckets back and forth through the village. Person B is thinking more like a business owner and investor. And what person B does then instead is he goes out, hires an architect, gets an engineering firm, hires investors, goes to the stock market and all this. And instead of hauling buckets, what he does is he puts in a pipeline. And so what my rich dad said to me, he says, if you want to be rich, you build pipelines, you don't haul buckets. And so what's happening for most people is every day they have less and less time, they're working harder, they're making money, the government's taking it, and they're not building pipelines. What I'm going to be talking to you, the strategy I had was to build pipelines. And after I built one pipeline, then I go and build another pipeline, and then I build another pipeline. So I may have started off slower than I may have made less money than the person who was an employee or self-employed, which I cover in Cash Flow Quadrant quite a bit in my next book. They're going back and forth making more money, but that's actually short term. And they're planning to be poor at age 65 because they could be less income because they're going to stop hauling those buckets. And what the rich are doing instead is the strategy is to keep building pipelines. So at age 65, it's just more and more money is pouring in on them. And then what they need is an insurance or protection. And the protection is provided on the pipeline because there's people who want to stick holes in it and take some of the profit, should we say. And the number one sticker of holes in the thing is the government. And number two are other people, you know, people who sue you, et cetera, or you make your own mistakes and you lose money. So the way the pipeline is covered is via insurance or via corporations. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. When you talked about the various strategies, you know, so often people have a very junk drawer approach to their financial situation.
That's correct, yeah.
And, you know, the kitchen junk drawer, you buy a hammer, you throw it in there, you buy a mutual fund and throw it in there. There's no difference.
You get a hot tip. Somebody says, oh, you should buy 10 shares of this high-tech company. So you buy 10 shares and you drop it in the junk drawer.
Absolutely. And just like this person with the buckets, you know, that is a junk drawer approach. It's a piecemeal, unholistic picture of trying to get a job done quickly without having that long-term vision in mind.
They're taking shortcuts.
Exactly. And again, I think that really goes back to what you want to have happen. So if you have a strategy in place,
which is building a pipeline.
Correct. And, you know, in fact, let's pause there and go back to ways that people can build pipelines early on. I mean, there's so many opportunities in variety of different networking things that they could be doing or an insurance career where
Oh, that's a good point. That's what I'm going to bring up. The moment you start thinking strategically versus product, versus whether it's a mutual fund or real estate, the moment you start thinking strategically in a pipeline, there's more than just real estate, bonds, and mutual funds to build that pipeline. One of the things we recommend in building a business is network marketing. Network marketing is a way of owning, it's an information age type franchise, where that you work really hard, but if you work really hard today, it pays for years and years and years. The same thing as an insurance career. Is that correct?
That's correct. And that will build a pipeline. And then furthermore, you can use strategies like insurance to protect that pipeline because the protection component has to be in place as you continue to build your wealth.
Which is what I'm saying real quickly. As I always say, there's only two kinds of money problems. Problem number one is you don't have any money. And problem number two, which is another problem, you have too much money. Would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely.
And both types of problems require different kinds of advice and different kinds of insurance. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
They have different strategies entirely for those two different instances. Also, on your idea of either the insurance career or the network marketing, multi-level marketing, I have a friend who's a general agent, and he was telling me the story of how hard it is to recruit people into insurance because they usually end up having to work really hard for the first couple of years, and they're dealing with kids right out of college who, gee, they can go to work for the bank at $30,000 or $40,000, and why would they go work at this insurance agency and maybe make $20,000 the first year, not realizing that after they've done it for 10 years, they've got $100,000, $150,000 coming through the pipeline without
even
working.
Whether they work or not, yes.
That's right.
So the question is, for all of us at any age, do we want to just keep carrying buckets or do we want to start building a pipeline which has an investment in the beginning, but just like interest compounds, that work will compound and give us great rewards?
I'm thinking long-term versus short-term. And what I find with most people is they want job security or they want to make a quick buck. You know, I can make a lot of money by being a consultant or I should start my own little business. And they want money right away because they've got bills to pay. I don't blame them. A business owner and investor must think long term. So what we're saying here is this. My rich dad said two things. You build businesses, and that could be network marketing. I don't recommend anybody start. I've been trained most of my life to start companies. And I wouldn't recommend it to my worst enemy because it's a lot of work to build something like Bill Gates did or Michael Dell or Branson out of England. That's hard work. But today it's very possible for people to build their own businesses, either via the insurance industry, because you're building up residual or passive income. And I think that's a big subject for accounting, isn't that correct? Passive income versus direct income?
Absolutely. The earned income, which is what a self-employed person does, is the highest taxed. You have to pay a self-employment tax. And passive, you don't have that.
And that's a big difference. I don't pick this up here. I don't make it too complicated. There's income that you're taxed on, income you're not taxed on. And what the poor and middle class do, they say, I'm a good, hardworking man or I'm a good, hardworking person. The trouble with being good and hardworking is that the government takes the largest share of taxes from people who are hardworking. People who are generating income, either passively or residually, pay less in taxes, oftentimes get tax breaks. So this is all part of the strategy. So if I could review it again really quickly, you build businesses that have residual or passive income in it. And that's why, as far as investing goes, that's an investment strategy because you're thinking a reward for long-term, you know, delayed gratification versus short-term gratification.
And don't you think that not only does sometimes the investment have to be in dollars, but also in time?
Well, you know, there's only two things you can invest, time or money. And most people say, well, I don't have any money. I said, well, then invest the time. And that's why I recommend, you know, if you're going to build your own company, good luck. But network marketing is good. There's good companies and bad companies out there. But if the company is proven and successful, then it's not the system that's going to fail. It's just you that's going to. You just work the system, and it'll pay buckets of water day in, day out through the pipeline, while your friends who took the high-paying job are hauling buckets. You go out and build the second pipeline, the third pipeline. And when you're 65, you got a big problem called too much money. But then you call Kim Butler in and say, I need insurance to cover too much money now. Is that true?
That's right.
And so most people are hauling buckets and they plan to stop working and become poor at age 65, clinging to their mutual funds, which are paper assets. And the problem I have with mutual funds is taxes. I don't know if most people realize this, is that the difference between real estate and mutual funds is in mutual funds, you can make no money and get taxed. In other words, you make no money and you have to pay money in taxes. That's the problem I have with mutual funds, plus they're paper assets. Mutual funds as an investment vehicle. I'm going to tell you a story of a vehicle. Investments are just vehicles. For instance, I want to go from L.A. to New York. Well, you can walk. You can take the bus. You can ride the bicycle. Take the train. You can take a truck. You can hitchhike. You can take the shuttle. Or you can take the jetliner. Which one's up to you? To me, a mutual fund is like riding a bus. It is slow. Some people make a lot of money, and granted. But for the average person, they don't get there fast enough with it. On top of that, you're taxed. What's the thing about taxes on mutual funds?
Well, the biggest part with mutual funds is the traditional way of just owning them. I go invest in ABC fund. I have no control over how the investment goes or when I get taxed. Whereas with real estate, for just as an example in the United States, if I have a building that's appreciated $500,000, I can do a like-kind exchange and defer the tax. I can choose when or if I'm going to pay tax on that.
Right. Well, most people say, I bought a stock and the price went up. Well, in real estate, it says the price went up also. The difference between a stock going up or a mutual fund going up and real estate going up is a stock and mutual fund, you're taxed on it. With real estate, I can take all those gains, as they're called, and not paying a tax on it. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right.
So that's how I get rich quicker.
And what else do you have from real estate that you do not have from mutual funds?
I have something passive losses.
And cash flow?
Yeah. And cash flow. I mean, the reason I don't have to work is because one of my pipelines is my real estate investment corporation, which is in a C corporation. All the property is held in limited partnership. Now, if you don't understand that, don't worry, because that's where you hire a smart person to tell you how to do all this. I have all this income coming in. On top of that, it's a lot of it's tax-free because I'm depreciating my property. The government says, the reason I know this, why the rich do this way, because the government is rewarding you for going this way. It punishes you for going stocks and mutual funds, and it rewards you for going to real estate and to owning your own businesses. So you got to look, why do the rich go that way? Because the government wants you to go that way. Is that true?
It's actually amazing when you think about it. With a mutual fund held the traditional way, you have a paper asset that you have no control over.
Subject to market forces.
Exactly, that are totally out of your control, that you have to pay tax that you might not have any cash for.
Right.
As opposed to a business, which because you designed the pipeline, you have a lot of control. You have managed the risk by having good advisors with good insurance in place and took good tax planning in place. again, you're controlling the pipeline, which could include real estate or your businesses.
Right. And what Diane and I were just working on this, I don't have one corporation. I have multiple corporations. I do it legally, you know, as a way of doing it, which you hire good advice for. What she's talking about, if I make too much money in one corporation, I just don't pay the taxes the way the, you know, employee, the government takes it before you get it, and self-employed, the government takes it before you get it also. I can move my income from one corporation to the other and offset it against paper losses.